session number 26979.
Albert Pullen, Real 2. So we were talking about being in the holding camp in Holland.
That's right. Well, as I say, there was not much to do, and the troops had got to be entertained somehow. And they put on a football match every afternoon. And they had a regular team of physical training instructors. And they all just got hold of anyone they could to make up the other team. And this particular day, an officer came into our tent and said, "We've got an all-officer team this afternoon playing these physical training sergeants. Any of you fellas play soccer?" And there were four of us sitting at a table, and I looked at the others, and they all nodded. I said, we'll play. Oh, he said, "I only need four. That's fine." So we went out, and they fitted it up with kit, and we went out, and we'd watched this team of APTC sergeants sort of win every time they played, because they played as a team. Anyway, we were just a scratch crowd. We didn't even know where the others could play. And one of the fellows called Dodman, Ronnie Dodman, who I'd known for a long time, he was an ex-Royal Signals officer. And he played centre forward. The ball was kicked to him early on, and he sort of trapped it, and he just weaved his way around about three men. He just banged it in the corner of the net. And I thought, "God, Ronnie's pretty good." And I was outside right. It was, by the time I got on the field, there was only one position left. That was outside right. And I was a full-back, really, but anyway, I had to play. And I thought, right, if Ronnie can shoot like that, I'll follow up behind him. The goalie will never be able to handle them. So anyway, the result was that we finally won 10-0. Ronnie scored six, and I scored three. And when we came off the field, I said to Ronnie, "You've played this game before, haven't you, Ronnie?" He said, "Oh, yes," he said. "I played for Chester." He said, "But my father, who apparently had a boot and shoe firm somewhere in North Wales, he doesn't want me to play. He doesn't want me to play as a professional. He wants me to go back into the firm. So I just play for Chester as an amateur." I mean, he was virtually a professional footballer.
And so what was his
name, Ronnie? Dodman. And anyway, I didn't meet... I met him once, actually, later on, but that was after the war.
Yeah.
But... And I say, I was then very lucky, because I was told that I was joining the 8th Battalion, the Royal Scots, in the 15th Scottish Division, as signals officer, as their officer had been wounded. Their signals officer had been wounded. So I eventually found the 8th Battalion, the Royal Scots.
Whereabouts?
And they were still in Holland. They hadn't yet headed into Germany. And I joined them, and I said, I found the CO, and I said, "I'm your new signals officer." And he said, "Oh," he said, "I did lose my signals officer," he said, "but he was replaced." But he said, "I didn't lose you." He said, "I'm so short of officers, I'll just have to hang on to you. But I'll report the fact that to divisional headquarters that I've got a trained signals officer." So he posted me to a company that had only got one other officer.
Which company was that?
It was C Company. And the only officer, there are normally five officers in an infantry rifle company. There's a major in charge, a captain second in command, and three lieutenants. And the only one left was the captain. The others had either been killed or wounded. So I automatically became second in command of the company.
I mean, you were joining a group of people who'd been through a lot together. They'd
yeah.
lost a lot of friends.
Yeah.
Did they talk about the action they see?
Not really. They didn't talk about it much. No, no. But
did they used to welcome you in? You were quite comfortable
with them. Oh yes, I was welcomed in very, very happily. As I say, they were so short of officers anyway, and I was an unknown, so they didn't know what I was like. But I soon settled in with them. Yeah.
Do you remember any of the names of people in that company?
No, not really.
Or the commanding officer?
No, the captain was a South African, funnily enough. And one of the other officers I got to know in one of the other companies, was a Canadian. So we got quite a few sort of from Commonwealth countries there. But, the captain who was in charge of the company, the second in command, was called Kidd, Jack Kidd, Captain Kidd. But so I stayed with them for quite a while.
Where did you join them? It was somewhere in Holland, was it? Did you stay put or?
It was no. We moved into Germany, and as we. Well, I missed the Rhine crossing, fortunately, which was just shortly after the Rhine crossing. And we moved through Germany. I can't even remember where it was now. But
was there much opposition?
From time to time. We ran into some opposition, yes. And it was a bit nasty here and there.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of those incidents.
We did one or two night attacks through woods, which was quite unpleasant.
Do you remember going out on one of those attacks?
We went out on patrols, which weren't very pleasant. Mm-hmm. But
can you describe one of those patrols, what it was like setting off? How many would go on the patrol?
Probably about a dozen men. And I remember once we were going through a night patrol through a wood, and I was sort of at the back with the wireless set, and everything stopped in front of me. And I waited for a while, and I crept forward, and as I crept forward, the men in front just opened up, and they'd run into a German patrol. And they just wiped out the German patrol. And they'd seen them before they'd seen us. Incidents like that weren't very pleasant.
Must be very nerve-wracking.
It was. It wasn't pleasant at all. And having come into it from the signals, it was something quite different as far as I was concerned.
Because a lot of these infantry men would have been quite experienced, I suppose.
Oh, yes. Some of the officers, later on, some of the officers like me came from other arms. All the men, of course, were infantry men. Mm. And a lot of the officers, of course, were infantry officers.
So they were very experienced by 45, yes.
There was one interesting point. As I say, as we moved into Germany, we every rifle company had a Dutch soldier as an interpreter. They spoke good English and good German. And after a while, we lost our Dutch soldier was wounded, and we lost him. And we were told that we hadn't got any replacements. We just have to do the best we could. So the company commander said to me, "See if we've got anyone who can speak German." Well, in an infantry rifle battalion, there are probably about 150 men. There wasn't one who could speak any German. In fact, the jocks, the private soldiers, I mean, they had a job to speak their own language, I think, most of the time. And I found that I was the only one who could speak any German at all. And mine was schoolboy German, of course. So I was the interpreter. So if anyone was sort of, if we had to approach the civilian population or talk to any prisoners, I was the only one who could converse with them.
So what sort of, I mean, you were going from along main roads, were you? Or were you going cross-country? Or?
Well, if we had to go along main roads, quite often we just rode on tanks. If tanks were going that way to save us walking, we would ride on the tank. But quite often, of course, we're going through open country. Yeah.
And you were coming across villages and farms.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
What was the country like then? I mean, how were the people?
Well, the country itself was all right. I mean, I found out later, of course, when I went to the bigger towns. The bigger towns, of course, were in a terrible state, but in the country, there was no real, except where there'd been fighting, of course. In some villages, there'd been fighting and houses were burnt.
What did you see of the civilian population?
Not a lot, really. No, they kept out of the way pretty well.
Because I mean, some parts of Germany, they'd had, you know, almost so huge shortages of food and so on, hadn't they?
Yes.
Did you see signs of that?
No, not really. No, no,
No. The country people who had allotments.
The country people, I think, were much better catered for. Yeah.
So you were going on through Germany. Do you know roughly which sort of route you took?
Well, we were heading for the Elbe, the River Elbe, just south of Hamburg, and we did the assault crossing of the Elbe.
Did you tell me about that? Can you tell me instantly?
Yes,
about
I can tell you something.
You first knew what was
I was in C Company, but then we got made up. We got fully made up with officers and men, so we were fully complimented. And the CO called me in and he said, look, we've now got a full complement of officers, but as you've been second in command of C Company, I'm moving you to A Company as second in command. So I went to A Company and I knew that we were about to do the crossing of the L. So I sought out the company commander of A Company and said, what's our role? And he said, we're the assault company. We go in first.
How did you feel about that?
Not very happy. So anyway, he said, I think the best thing to do, because there are three platoons in the company, and he said, I think the best thing to do is we'd better split up, because we were going over in landing craft. And he said, I think you'd better go with the first platoon, and I'll go with the second one. And the third platoon can come over when we've established the crossing the other side. So I wasn't very happy about that. But anyway, I went with the first platoon.
What was the plan? Did you have a detailed plan about how you were going to...
The idea was that we went across and we just fired into the bank as we go. We didn't know what was there, of course.
Is this after dark or in daylight?
This was just as it was getting light. We went across at first light.
And did you know what...
We knew what the terrain was like because we'd been into a house the other side of the river the day before. We're going to cross, where we couldn't be seen from the other side. And it didn't look as though there was much activity. And we hoped that there wouldn't be much there because we didn't know. But actually, when we did the assault crossing, there was very little opposition. As we approached... They obviously, the German occupiers of the bank just went back. So we landed on the bank and we dug in, and the company commander and the second platoon came, and they joined us. And then, unfortunately, the Germans had withdrawn and to shell the crossing. And they shelled the crossing. And the third platoon, which is the one I would have opted to be with if I'd have had my chance, they got direct hits on the bank the other side, and they were pretty well decimated. We got up and ran for some farm buildings across a field in front. And luckily, while we ran across this field, it was all quiet. So we got to the farm buildings, and the first and second platoons... we were all right. I don't think we had any casualties at all. But the third platoon, the one that was on the bank, that hadn't even come over, they were very badly hit. Very badly hit.
That must have been quite shocking, in a way.
It was, because I had to go back and try and round up what was left and bring them over. And the poor fellows walking around, you know, completely shell-shocked. And
but you still brought them over.
We brought them over, yeah. Oh, yeah, they stayed with us, yeah. They gradually recovered. Yeah.
That's always a difficult one, isn't it? You know, when someone being a coward or shell-shocked or...
Oh, yes, yeah.
Did you consider sending any of them back to the
MRO? No, I don't think any of them were bad enough, really, to go back. They were wounded, of course. It had to go back. The wounded had to go back.
So you got to the farm buildings...
And then, about a day or two later, after we'd crossed the Elbe, I was leading the company. Of course, the company commander had gone back for something or other. And the adjutant pulled up by the side of me in a jeep and said, the CO wants you. Jump in. So I jumped in. And when I got to see the CO, he said, you remember I told you that I'd report that I'd got a train signals officer? I said, yes. He said, well, you're posted. The 9th Battalion, the Cameronians, have lost their signals officer. So you're off there. So I found my way to the 9th Battalion, the Cameronians.
Right. Whereabouts were they?
Oh, not far away, actually.
Yeah.
We'd crossed the Elbe, and we were heading in the direction of Hamburg. And
so joining the Cameronians, was it very similar in setup to the 8th Battalion?
It was similar, apart from that they were an infantry regiment, of course, but they were light infantry. And I must admit, I didn't know the difference between light infantry and other infantry, but there's quite a big difference. Light infantry, a private in the ordinary infantry is called private. A private soldier in the light infantry is called rifleman. And they don't slope arms. Light infantry don't slope arms. They carry the rifle at the trail, holding it down the side. And they march at a much faster rate. But apart from that, of course, there's not much difference. The only trouble was I had to make sure I didn't give the order to slope arms, because they don't slope arms.
Yeah. Were they quite welcoming to you? Or?
Oh, yes. Yeah, they were perfectly happy to have me, having lost their own. I found out what happened to the previous signals officer. Apparently, he was in a house, and sort of well forward, and his batman brought him up a jug of water to have a shave and put it down on a window ledge. And he said to him, don't put that there. He said, you'll have me shot. And he walked across to pick it up, and a sniper shot him right through the shoulder. He was lucky. It was through the shoulder. So that's how I got the job.
Yes,
so I was very pleased in a way that he got wounded, particularly as he wasn't badly wounded. So I became the signals officer then, instead of an infantry sort of platoon officer. Yeah.
So you saw action with them straight away?
But not a lot, really. It was within a week or two the war had ended, and it was petering out at that stage anyway.
Of course, you've got this note from
That was when I was with the Royal Scots.
Oh, right. Tell me about that, because you've mentioned that you were the only German speaker.
Yeah. Well, that was... we were sort of on top of a ridge one day, sort of looking down in a valley. And one of the fellows came in and said, there's a German soldier coming up the path from up the valley with a white flag. So I said, well, bring him along to see me when he comes in. And he brought him in, and he was quite a youngish fella. And he got this note, and he didn't know some English, and a schoolboy English, and I was schoolboy German. And I was able to converse with him. And he gave me this little note, this surrender note. And apparently there were about a dozen of them, and they'd all deserted from their unit. And they were holed up in a house down at the bottom of the valley, and they were waiting for British troops to appear. And they didn't want to come up in a body. They thought if they'd come up in a body, it would be too much like an army advancing, and we might shoot them. So they sent the one up with the flag, and he asked me if I'd send someone down to collect them. And so I called in one of the sergeants and said, take a couple of men, and it's in that first house in the village down there, and I'll keep this fellow with me, so you'll be all right. And he said, we haven't got any arms. They've thrown their arms away. So I thought, well, there won't be any problem. So I sent this sergeant and a couple of men down the valley, and I stood at the top and watched. And he went down this long lane in the valley, and he went into the first house. The door opened, and in he went with his two men, and nothing happened. And I waited and waited and waited, and wondering whether I should do something. And then the door opened, and out came the sergeant and his two men and a stream of Germans, and they came up the hill. And when he got to me, I said to him, what the hell have you been playing at? You were in that house for ages. Well, he said, when we got there, he said, they'd got some tea ready for us, so we thought we'd better have a cup of tea with them before we can. I thought, isn't this wonderful? The middle of a war, and they go and have a cup of tea with the enemy.
What was the attitude of these German soldiers? They were quite
They were terrified, really. They were so anxious to be taken prisoner of war. That was their main aim. They just wanted to make sure they didn't get involved in any more fighting.
Do you know what unit they were from?
No. I know they came from Hanover. But, that was their hometown. Yeah.
So, back with the Cameronians.
And then, shortly after that, of course, the war ended. We heard by Wallace, of course, that the war had ended. We were very, very pleased. Although there was an awful lot of work still going on, as far as we were concerned. We were the first troops into Kiel. We actually went into Kiel on VE Day.
Tell me about going into Kiel.
Well, Kiel was in a terrible state. There'd been any running water or electricity for about two or three years, and most of the buildings had collapsed. A lot of high-rise flats that had just keeled in. And we just had to sort of get whatever accommodation we could in the houses that were habitable. Yeah. And
was the local population still there?
Well, there was quite a few people still around.
And what sort of state were they in?
They seemed reasonably looked after, reasonably cared for. I think they'd found accommodation, you know, in parts of where they could still have a roof over their head.
What was their attitude to you?
Very happy to see us. In fact, we found that the Germans were delighted to see us. Their alternative, of course, was the Russians, and they just didn't want to see the Russians. So, but we did find that Kiel, of course, being a port, and the Germans who were at sea had heard that Kiel was in the hands of the British, and they were all very anxious to come into Kiel and give themselves up.
Really?
So we were sort of flooded out with prisoners of war.
So you had ships coming in?
We had ships coming in, discharging their sailors. Really? But just outside Kiel was a big army camp, and we used that as a sort of POW camp. And just pushed them all in there, and they more or less had to look after themselves until we could get people to come up and take them away.
But so was that chaotic? It sounds quite organised, really, in some ways.
Well, it was only chaotic in view of the fact there was just the numbers involved, really. And they were all, as I say, the Germans were very anxious to be taken prisoner by the British. And we found out later, of course, that the one thing they did absolutely abhor was the thought of being taken prisoner by the Russians. And they weren't far away at the time, of course. Very, very close.
So what were your feelings on VE Day?
Well, we were delighted, of course. Absolutely delighted that the war was over.
Yeah.
It seemed to have gone on for such a long time. And particularly as I was in the infantry, it seemed, you know, it was salvation, really. I thought, now probably I should go home.
Yeah, but you didn't.
But didn't for another 12 months.
Yeah.
No.
So how long did you stay in Kiel?
Not long. We handed over to other troops coming in who took away all the POWs, and we moved along the coast to it was a place near near Travemünde, you know, where the doodle bombs came from, and we moved into a Luftwaffe camp there, which was absolutely delightful. It was, they got a swimming pool, playing fields, excellent accommodation, and they'd even got a string of horses that they used to ride. Of course, they'd all gone then, of course, and we took over this camp. We were there for part of the summer of 1945, which was very, very pleasant. And also, of course, we got the sea nearby. But it was rather amusing in many ways that there was about half a dozen horses, and our CO was a great horseman.
Do you remember his name?
Henning, his name was. He'd been with one of the Chindit, Wingert's Chindits in Burma. He'd commanded a battalion in Burma, and they'd sent him back after he'd done his stint out there, and he joined us, because as soon as the war ended, our CO was a fellow called Remington Hobbs. He was only a young fella. They whipped him out to the Far East quickly. I don't think he ever got there before the war ended. But he was sent out there, and Colonel Henning joined us, and of course he'd already been out Far East anyway. But Colonel Henning was from a sort of a landed family, and he rode. So when we were moved, actually they altered the boundaries, and we were taken. We became part of the Russian zone, and we had to move back near Hamburg. And the CO said, "We're not leaving our horses for the Russians. We'll take them with us." And there was a German groom who also intended that he'd come with us too. He wasn't going to be taken over by the Russians. And we'd got a corporal who knew a lot about horses. So, of course, we moved by transport. And when we moved, the CO said to this corporal, "Right, you and the German groom follow us with the horses." And told him where we'd be in Hamburg. And off we went. Well, several days later, one evening, the German groom and the corporal arrived with four horses. And the CO said, "Where are the other two?" So the corporal said, "Well," he said, "look, it's taken us 3 or 4 days to come here," he said, "and you didn't leave us any money." He said, "And I sold the other two horses." The CO said, "You've sold them?" He said, "Yes," he said, "a German farmer," he said, "was delighted to buy them off us." He said, "I should think he was too." And they got the German swastika, you know, stamped on their flank and all that sort of thing. And the CO said, "Look, we can't have this," he said, "we'll have to get them back." So he said to the corporal, "You remember where it was?" So he said, "Oh yes," he said, "it was only about a day away." So he said to me, "Look, Albert," he said, "you're the only one who can speak any German," he said. "We'll have a whip round," he said, "and you take the money and buy the horses back." So I set off in the jeep with this German corporal, with this corporal. And we found these two horses in a field. And I went and saw the farmer. And he was most reluctant to have his money back. But of course we insisted. So we took the horses back. So we had our two horses back. We moved just outside Hamburg, and we spent the rest of the time then until I was demobbed in and around Hamburg.